Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and boy, am I ticked off. Has this ever happened to you? You discover something really great, say, a young musician who's just beginning to make a name for herself, and you think, wow, wait till I show this to all my friends. They'll love her too, and they'll all think I'm really cool for discovering her album before anyone else. Then you get to your friends and you find that two other people have already told them about the exact same album. Well, here's what happened. Late last year, I noticed that the Australian musician Courtney Barnett was going to be here in the States in late February, so I arranged for her to come in and play a set for us. And then I sat back and felt all smug and pleased with my uniquely perceptive taste. Until January, when my colleague Mark Wheat from the Minneapolis radio station The Current joined us with a Pick 3 playlist, and there on his playlist was Courtney Barnett.
She has a lot of humor, and again, great lyricism. This story is about her going out into the garden and having basically not being able to breathe, which sounds like a horror story, but the way she tells it, it's almost like she's reading a children's story to kids.
Yeah, I laughed like it wasn't bothering me, but this guy was totally stealing my thunder.
I feel proactive. I pull out weeds. All of a sudden, I'm having trouble breathing in. I'm having trouble breathing.
And then a few weeks later, BJ Novak, one of the stars and producers of the hit TV series The Office, brought in his Pick 3 playlist, and damn it, there was Courtney Barnett again.
I love her. I play her all the time. This is my favorite song, Avant Gardner, but I love this whole album. I love everything she's put out. It's so, it's sort of a very modern way of writing lyrics.
I get adrenaline straight to the heart.
Okay, so I'm not ahead of the curve. In fact, I guess I have to stand in line to introduce you to Courtney Barnett. Good thing her songs are worth it. She and her band, the Courtney Barnetts, will play for us live later. Also, Turnabout is fair play, so we'll steal some of Broadway's thunder by totally telling you all about the new crop of musicals headed our way. But first... The swelling strings, the stirring crescendo, the ominous bass notes. Going to the movies would be, well, just moving pictures without the music that accompanies the film. The Oscars are just around the corner, and joining me to talk about the, frankly, starry field of contenders for Best Original Song and Best Original Score is the lead writer for the New York Times Carpetbagger blog, Milena Rysik. Welcome back.
Thank you.
So the Oscars are right around the corner. How does this year's crop in the two music categories stack up?
Oh, man, this is the most rock-starriest group of hopefuls that I've encountered in my 5 years doing this, at least for Best Song. I mean, you've got pop stars in U2, R&B stars Pharrell, indie stars Karen O, and then, of course, a Broadway star, Idina Menzel, singing Let It Go. So it's really, it's a category that I think a lot of music fans should be looking out for.
Right. And even in the Best Original Score category, you have the Grammy-winning indie rock band,
Arcade Fire. Right, exactly.
So let's start with her, because there's interesting things going on here in both categories. Arcade Fire up for Best Score, and Karen O up for Best Original Song. She co-wrote this with Spike Jonze, the director, right?
Yeah, that's right. She had this, you know, Spike and she and Spike have known each other for a long time, and he sent her the script very early on and had her read it and start thinking about writing a song. And she kind of composed it in her dining room in her apartment here in New York, and you know, there's like in the demo track, there's like the sound of a fire truck going by, and it's very, very indie. And she sent it to him as a kind of demo, and he wound up liking it so much that he used it in the movie's previews.
It is a little bit of a quirky song, as you might expect from Karen O, front woman of the
band Yeah Yeah Yeahs and champion of the ukulele.
Yeah, right. The ukulele instrumentation is something that she told me came from one of her favorite movie moments, which is the movie The Jerk with Steve Martin. There's a scene in that movie where he and Bernadette Peters are walking along the beach and they start singing You Belong to Me, Tonight You Belong to Me, and he's playing the ukulele, and she said that was one of the most romantic movie moments she'd seen. Of course, in The Jerk, later Bernadette Peters pulls out like a horn and starts playing it, becomes a comedy. That doesn't happen in Her.
This is from the film Her by Spike Jonze. It's up for Best Original Song, Karen O singing Moon Song.
There's things I wish I knew. There's no thing I'd keep from you. It's a dark and shiny place, but with you, my dear, I'm safe and we're a million miles away.
It's not so, it's unusual, but it's not unheard of for a film director to also be involved in the score. I mean, you know, the Halloween scores, for example, director as composer.
Right, that definitely happens. I mean, in the case of Her, Spike wrote some of the lyrics for the Moon Song, and when he was recording Arcade Fire, I mean, he's not credited with that Oscar nomination, but he definitely worked closely with them when they were recording. They recorded it up in their home base in Montreal, and he was there, and they did a lot of back and forth. Yeah,
right. So Karen O is up for Best Original Song from the movie Her, and Arcade Fire is up for Best Original Score for the same film for
right.
Her. But they are up against some real heavyweights here.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
Guys who have a couple of trophies already up
yeah.
on the mantelpiece.
In that category, you got John Williams, which almost every time John Williams has a score, he's got a nomination. He's mm-hmm. one of the most Oscar-nominated people in the history of the Academy. But I don't think he's actually considered a favorite this year.
That's The Book Thief,
That's right. Yeah, and it's kind of the classic Oscar score, you know, big moving strings, the things that you would expect from John Williams.
Right.
But another person that's in that category this year is Alexander Desplat, who has been, it's his sixth nomination in 8 years. So the Academy definitely likes him, but so far he hasn't won.
Yeah.
But the score for Philomena is the kind of thing that might turn that tide.
I thought his score for Moonrise Kingdom a year ago was brilliant. The way it sort of played off the Benjamin Britten stuff, but because there was so much Benjamin Britten pre-composed music, I guess the Academy wasn't so kindly disposed
right.
towards
they,
that score.
It has to be more original than that, they think, yeah.
So Philomena fit the bill and... Is it a contender?
I think so. I think he could be. He could change his losing streak this year. Absolutely.
Let's hear a little bit. Alexander Desplat and the score to the film Philomena. Alexander Desplat's Oscar-nominated score to the film Philomena in the category of Best Original Score. We're talking to Milena Ryzik, who writes for the New York Times Carpetbagger blog about the Oscar nominees in both categories, both music categories, Best Original Song and Best Original Score. Boy, Desplat likes those bell sounds. He uses those a lot.
Yeah, well, in this case, what he was going for was this kind of motif. You know, he decided that the movie, of course, you know, it's about Philomena Lee, who's this Irish woman who's had to endure the forced adoption of her firstborn child. And he decided, you know, the movie's about her. The musical theme should be focused on her. So she's really the only character that has her own theme. The other character, Steve Coogan, who plays this journalist, Martin Sixsmith, he said he tried to write a theme for him, but it just didn't work. You know, it was too extraneous. And in Philomena, her theme starts from this moment where the first time we see the character and she meets the guy who becomes the father of her child at a fairground when she's, you know, a teenager. And so you hear that kind of tinkling sound of the fair in, you know, the organ music in her theme throughout the movie.
So, as you said, this is his sixth nomination. He has yet to win.
That's right.
He's got a long way to go to match the frustration of Thomas Newman.
That's right. Yeah,
who's
that's
been
true.
Nominated 10 times and has not won. He did the score to Saving Mr. Banks. Is this an outsider in the field?
I think it's probably an outsider. You know, I think the movie itself didn't get any other nominations, so that's an indication of how, you know, how many fans it has within the Academy. Everybody votes for these categories, so when they're picking the final winner. So, you know, if people didn't really like the movie, they might not be inclined to acknowledge the score.
All right. Well, let's get back to the Best Original Song category, where you have four powerhouse nominees and a fifth one that was nominated but not nominated.
Yeah, there was a little controversy in the category this year. There was a song that came from a little scene movie, and ultimately the Academy decided that the composer did some weird promotions and he sent too many emails out to his friends in the music branch, and they rescinded the nomination, which is very rare.
Very rare. It was the title track from a faith-based film called Alone Yet Not Alone, and the composer, last name Broughton, I think, was not only a governor of the Academy.
Yeah, former governor, yeah.
Right, but also had led the music division.
Right.
So there was definitely some, I mean, when the nominations first came out, I thought, that
seems
a little weird.
Yeah, there was a lot of eyebrows raised, exactly.
Alone, yet not alone, not forsaken when on my own, I can lean upon his arm.
So enough eyebrows raised that it was eventually denominated, or whatever you call it. So, but there is a very heavy favorite in this short field.
In the song category, there is, and that would be Let It Go from Frozen, from the Disney animated movie.
Why is everybody rooting for the Lopez team here?
Yeah, the song was written by Bobby and Kristen Lopez, who are a married couple of composers. They live and work in Brooklyn. And it's just a behemoth of a hit. The song has been certified platinum, which is pretty unusual for a song that comes from an animated movie musical. I don't know when the last time that sort of thing happened. And the soundtrack is a big hit, and it's, you know, the movie itself is a front runner in its category. So it's the kind of thing that has a lot of momentum, and that matters.
And the Disney magic, do they sprinkle a little Disney fairy dust?
Yeah,
on?
Maybe so.
All right, let's hear a little bit in case you haven't heard it. This is Idina Menzel's recording. Demi Lovato does a version in the film as well, but this is the one that everyone's talking about from the movie Frozen.
Let it go, let it go. Can't hold it back anymore. Let it go, let it go. Turn away and slam the door. I don't care what they're going to say. Let the story. It's funny how some distance makes everything seem small. And the fears that once controlled me can't get to me at all. It's time to see what I
Let It Go is the song Idina Menzel singing from the Disney animated movie Frozen, which, as Milena Rysik described, is a behemoth, both in terms of film and its soundtrack. And this is the very heavy favorite in the Oscar category for Best Original Song. Bobby Lopez worked famously with the guys from South Park on Book of Mormon, did Avenue Q.
That's right. He is a multiple Tony winner for those Broadway musicals. He's also got an Emmy and a Grammy for kind of related stuff. So if he gets the Oscar, he's going to be one of those, what I think, 8 EGOT winners in the world. And a pretty young one at that. Yeah.
So EGOT is Emmy, Grammy, Oscar.
Tony. Yeah.
He seems like a shoo-in, doesn't he?
I think he might be, yeah. I mean, I think you too might be a rising contender, but generally speaking, I think, you know, Let It Go's got it in the bag.
You spoke to Bono about this.
I have, and even Bono thinks that Let It Go is going to win,
yeah.
Which is something.
So you sort of portray you two as being kind of portraying themselves as nervous and anxious about
well,
this.
Well, they call themselves the underdogs. But, of course, perversely, in the Oscar world, you want to be the underdog. You never want to be seen as the front runner. That's considered bad form.
The song Ordinary Love for the Mandela biopic. It wouldn't be an awards ceremony, a 2014 awards ceremony, without Pharrell making an appearance.
That's right.
The most famous hat in Christendom.
I hope to wear a Pharrell hat someday. It's my Oscar outfit goal.
Now, you know, if I were the odds maker and I was creating the morning line for this field, I would have, you know, Let It Go as the heavy favorite. I think my second choice would probably be Happy. Pharrell's song.
Yeah, it is. It's also a hit. I mean, and especially with the video that he created, this 24-hour video, which was this like YouTube and cultural phenomenon, the sensation. So, but in terms of a song, you know, it might not have the weight that people in the Academy go for like that. You might see somebody like U2 writing about Mandela and, you know, having a kind of political and personal edge to their song. That might be more up the Academy's alley.
Right.
On the other hand, you never know. I mean, last year you had a Flight of the Conchords, or 2 years ago you had a Flight of the Conchords guy win for a song from a Muppets movie. So you never know.
Yeah, and with Pharrell Williams, you know, here's a guy who's having a major cultural moment. And as you say, the song's a hit.
The song
is
a big
hit. It's out there.
Yep.
It's really from the film Despicable Me. So we're talking about the candidates for two Oscar categories, Best Original Song, Best Original Score. And as you've said, there's a lot of heavy hitters here. Is there anybody missing? Is there an egregious oversight on the part of the Academy this year?
In those categories? I don't think so. You know, I think that in terms of the best score, certainly you got, you know, the movies that you would think of having like real musical moments. I mean, the one movie that didn't get really acknowledged by the Academy hardly at all is Lost, which had an unusual score. It did get a Golden Globe for it for Alex Ebert, who, of course, is also an indie musician. He's the front man of Edward Sharpe and the Magnetic Zeros. And that movie kind of got snubbed by the Academy in almost all categories. So
is that unusual for the winner of the Golden Globe to not even get a nomination from the Academy?
No, there's not as much crossover in categories like these and in these smaller categories as you would, you know, as you would expect in acting and drama and stuff like that.
So, Milena, who do you expect to walk off with the Oscar on Oscar night for Best Original Score?
You know, that actually is a tough one. I think that most Oscar pundits think that the winner is going to be Stephen Price from Gravity. It has, you know, Gravity is a movie. It's a really taut movie with a lot of technical achievements and thrills, not a whole lot of dialogue. So the score does have to do a lot of emotional lifting, and his music is kind of it's not what you would expect for a movie set in space. It's not kind of shiny and burnished and technologically gleaming like you would expect. It's a little bit grungier. But I think this is a category where Academy voters could reward some of the other movies that they liked. Like, they could reward Alexander for Philomena, especially since he's had a bunch of nominations and no wins. Or they could go in the direction of crowning an indie, indie rock gods, the Arcade Fire score for her. It could go any of those directions.
All right. Be interesting to see the Academy Award up on the shelf next to the unexpected Grammy that Arcade Fire won a couple of years ago. We've been speaking with Milena Ryzik, writer for the New York Times Carpetbagger blog, about the Oscar nominees for Best Original Song and Best Original Score. Milena, good to see you again.
Thank you. You too.
This is Soundcheck. Bit of composer Thomas Newman's nominated score from the film Saving Mr. Banks. Up next, we move from the big screen to musical theater. Critic Michael Riedel of the New York Post will give us a sneak preview of what's on Broadway this spring. And later, a live performance in our studio from the Australian singer-songwriter Courtney Barnett. This is Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. This spring is shaping up to be a busy one on Broadway, especially when it comes to new musicals. Joining us with a preview is Michael Riedel, theater columnist for the New York Post and co-host of the weekly TV show Theater Talk on PBS. Michael, welcome to Soundcheck.
I'm delighted to be here, John.
So let's start with something that's got a little bit of controversy surrounding it. Woody Allen and Bullet Soul. I mean, controversy, Woody Allen, they go hand in hand.
You know, you have to, I think, separate the Woody's personal life from his show, Bullets Over Broadway, which is about to open here in New York. And I think that there's been a lot of concern on Broadway that the controversy surrounding these allegations about child abuse and sexual abuse, whatnot, is going to hurt the show. But I don't believe that to be the case. I think people have made their peace with Woody Allen many, many years ago. He has done a number of movies since those allegations first surfaced.
Yep.
And some of those movies have been terrific, and they have been critically acclaimed, and people have gone to see them. And so I don't think that the controversy swirling around Woody is going to affect the show at all.
Well, and if you look in the opera world, Wagner fans had to do
completely.
The same thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and
I mean, listen, one of my favorite poets is Ezra Pound, you know, and he was an anti-Semite as well. So there you are. Now, you really have to separate the private life of the artist from the work that the person does.
Now, this is Woody Allen's first musical on Broadway.
It is, although people don't know this, but Woody Allen is no stranger to Broadway because he wrote a number of plays that were on Broadway in the 60s, including Play It Again, Sam, a great movie with his friend Tony Roberts, of course. But that was originally a play, as was Don't Drink the Water. And you have to remember that Woody came out of that great Sid Caesar comedy writing room, the famous room that Mel Brooks came out of and Larry Gelbart came out of and Joe Stein, who wrote Fiddler on the Roof. All those guys came out of it, and Neil Simon as well. And all of those guys, and I've talked to many of them over the years, they all wanted nothing more than to write Broadway shows and Broadway plays. They all started out to be Broadway playwrights, but they wound up doing live television. And when that was over with, they all went to write Broadway shows and then ultimately went off to do movies and television and whatnot.
So Woody Allen's just gone on a more circuitous route because he did this as a film back in 1994.
Right, right. But there's a reason it's a movie about Broadway, Bullets Over Broadway. It's about the making of a Broadway musical, which is something that he knows.
1920s.
Yeah.
Bullets Over Broadway previews start on March 11th. It opens on April 10th. It stars Zach Braff, formerly of Scrubs and the movie Garden State. And because it is set in the 20s, the music here is of that period.
Yes, Woody is taking all of the many great popular tunes from the 1920s. Interesting, he's so secretive about everything that they won't release the song list. So we only know about four or five songs that are in the show, but everything else is a deep, dark Woody Allen secret.
Well, one of the ones we know about is I Found a New Baby,
yep,
which was recorded back in the day by Ethel Waters.
Ever Everybody look at me. Happy girlie, you will see. I've got someone nice, oh gee. Oh joy, what bliss. Just the treasure that I need. Pure as gold and guaranteed. Is he handsome? Yes, indeed. Let me tell you this, I found a new baby. A sweet honey boy. My passion for each baby has thrilled me with joy.
Ethel Waters, I Found a New Baby. That is one of the 1920s pop songs that Woody Allen will be using in Bullets Over Broadway. Now, there's another big musical already in previews, also based on a movie, and that is Rocky.
Yes.
Which, in a way, had an interesting twist on the old Broadway tradition of the out-of-town run-out.
They used to go to New Haven and Philadelphia and Baltimore. In this case, I think they went to Hamburg, Germany.
They went to Germany.
You know, it's, I think – I got to say, John, I think this is frankly – not to toot my own horn too much here, but this is because they're so afraid of what I might write in the Post, because I often went out of town to see all these shows. And I would go to L.A. and all over the place. Now they're going to Germany just so
just
they
so
can
you
stay
can't
far.
Find
away from me, but I want them all to know I have sources all around the globe. So I had somebody there on your opening night, and I know all about your show.
So it's based on the Sylvester Stallone movie of the same name, with music by Stephen Flaherty and Lynn Ahrens, and directed by Alex Timbers, who did Andrew Jackson. So what do your sources tell? First of all, it's in previews now. Have you seen one yet?
No, I have not. It would be a little unfair of me to sort of pounce that early.
Yeah.
Trust me, I will sooner or later. What I hear is that the special effects are really dazzling. The boxing ring, in fact, sort of it lifts up off the stage and moves out over the audience and twirls around. So you in the audience, you feel that you're actually right around the ropes of the boxing ring. And it's a great moment in the show. I think they're still working
out. Take that, Spider-Man.
right. But, yes. Except, you know, the difference between Spider-Man and Rocky. In Rocky, they're deliberately being punched and knocked around. In Spider-Man, it was inadvertent. but, you know, what I hear is they still have some story issues to work out, especially in the second act. There's always a second act problem in all new musicals. And I think the challenge for something like this is you've got that great – I think it's Bill Conti who wrote Gonna Fly Now.
Gonna Fly Now, right.
And they also have The Eye of the Tiger in that show. And those are classic, you know, classic pop songs of the era. So everybody goes into that musical waiting to hear Gonna Fly Now. And they only hear it in little bits and pieces. And they get a lot of Ahrens and Flaherty. And Lynn and Stephen are very talented. They wrote the score to Ragtime. But they have got to come up with at least two or three songs that are as – catchy, as insistent, as Gonna Fly Now, or you're going to have an audience just sitting there waiting to hear Gonna Fly Now. That was the problem that the Addams Family, that was done on Broadway a few years ago, had. Everybody went in there waiting for bum, 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 bum.
Right.
And they had issues and debates for forever about where we put the song, what do we do with it. And first they put it in the finale when I first saw it. Then they would only do little bits of it. And finally Jerry Zaks, the director, said, let's do it up front. Get it out of the way. Do it. End of it. They've heard it. We go on.
Right. Well, here's actress Margot Siebert. She plays Adrian in the show Rocky. And this is one of the new songs that Flaherty and Ahrens wrote. It's called Raining.
But you don't look up and you don't talk back and your odds are 10 to 9. Like a weed that grows from a pavement crack toward a patch of sun. You hide yourself in a tiny space as the voices rise. And you go someplace where no one ever cries. And if it keeps on raining, I think I might float away. Yes, if it keeps on raining, I may. The sky is
Margot Siebert.
All I can say is take out an umbrella, darling. That's a song that sounds probably good around Marie's crisis about 1 a.m, but I don't know about a Broadway show.
I have to say, that's not from Broadway. That's from a recent showcase that she did, obviously, just with
it's a song
piano
that,
accompaniment.
Yeah, yeah,
but it is from the musical Rocky, which is in previews now and opens on Broadway on March 13th. Once again, Michael Riedel is with us from the New York Post and the TV show Theater Talk on PBS. To preview a very, very busy Broadway musical season. And for many of us, the big one this spring is Hedwig and the Angry Inch.
Yes, that's a show that I have been a big champion of when I saw it off-Broadway, gosh, going on 10 years ago, I think.
Yeah.
One of the very rare musicals in which rock music, real rock music, actually works.
Right.
It's hard to write a rock score for Broadway because rock music can be very... introverted lyrically, and Broadway needs a kind of a muscular, melodic quality to it, and a song that drives the characters and drives the story. And a lot of rock music, they just drive the one particular song.
Right.
So those composers have a hard time building a character throughout a whole 2.5 hour experience on Broadway.
What did you think of the Green Day musical, American Idiot?
I was not a big fan of it. I thought it was well directed by Michael Mayer, but I did not think the songs were musical theater. But
this score for Hedwig and the Angry Inch.
Absolutely. I mean, there is a song in Hedwig and the Angry Inch called Wicked Little Town, which is a great rock song, a great ballad, and a great musical theater song. And that is really hard to pull together, those three strands.
Lady Luck has led you here. You're so twisted up there, twist you up, I fear. The buyer's hateful and devout, you're turning tricks till you're turned out. The wind's so cold it burns, you're burning out, blowing round. And if you've got no, you know you can follow my voice. The dark turns and noises, wicked little town.
That's Wicked Little Town, sung by John Cameron Mitchell from the original cast recording of Hedwig and the Angry Inch, which was an off-Broadway, really kind of underground sensation.
Yeah. Yeah, with John Cameron Mitchell, who wrote it and starred in it back in the day. And I remember when they announced it was coming back, coming to Broadway, I ran into John Cameron Mitchell in our neighborhood in the West Village, and he was originally going to star in himself. But then he started to do some rehearsals, and he thought, I am too old now to do this part. So it's gone to Neil Patrick Harris.
So there's your big star,
your star
power. Stephen Trask wrote the music.
You know, it's really, I think, a great, great loss for the musical theater that Stephen Trask never wrote another rock musical. And I remember talking to him at the time of Hedwig and the Angry Inch, and he had a lot of ideas for shows, and I was very excited that contemporary sound was coming to Broadway, and for whatever particular reason, he just drifted away to do something else.
Well, the musical previews start on March 29th. It opens on April 22nd. So Hedwig and the Angry Inch, for folks who've been sort of, you know, aware of what's happening around the periphery, mm-hmm. that's not a new name. But there is something totally new. If Then.
Yes.
Although, again, here we have some of Broadway's highest wattage star power involved.
Idina Menzel, of course, who everybody knows and loves from Wicked, is coming.
And Frozen,
right. Although, you know, it's funny about that because everyone's, oh, well, we're going to sell a lot of tickets because of her big song from Frozen. I'm sorry, Idina Menzel is not in Frozen. It's a cartoon character. Her voice is in Frozen. You know, and if cartoon characters' voices were to sell tickets, then whoever voiced Ariel in The Little Mermaid would have sold tickets to Disney's Little Mermaid, which was a complete fiasco on Broadway.
Yeah.
So you're not going to sell tickets just based on somebody's voice singing some popular song. But Idina does have a following in the theater. This is an original musical, which is something unique these days on Broadway, not based on a movie, not based on a book, written by Brian Yorkie and Tom Kidd, who did Next to Normal, which won the Pulitzer Prize. And it is what its title is, If Then. It's a series of questions posed in one's life. If I had done this, then that would have happened. But if I'd done that, then this would have happened.
Mm-hmm.
That could make for a rather confusing, labyrinthine book, if you will, and script, and that is indeed the problems they had out of town. They were trying to make the story clear to the audience, and it became a bit of a thicket in the second act, I'm told, and they've been trying to sort all of that out for Broadway.
Well, the we'll hear Idina Menzel and Tyler McGee in this song called If, from the new musical called If Then.
And if I told you we could be brand new, and if I held you, would you hold me too? And if I loved you and swore that I'd be true, tell me, what would you do?
And on those mornings when the storm blows past to clear white sun, and the city is glowing, and you know at last that your life's begun. 'Cause there's a moment when everything changes. There's a moment to leap off the cliff. There's a moment, there's no turning back. No turning back. And you wonder what if.
Idina Menzel and Tyler McGee singing If from the new Broadway musical If Then. About a 40-year-old woman who moves to New York City for a fresh start. Previews start March 5th. It opens on March 30th. And Michael Riedel with us on Soundcheck, giving us a preview of the season of musicals. There are a couple of big revivals. If Then is new, mm-hmm. but some of the old favorites are back.
Right, right.
What are you looking forward to?
Well, you know, there's a revival of Cabaret starring Alan Cumming. And I am ambivalent about this whole endeavor. I saw that revival originally in 1997, I believe, with Alan, and nobody knew who Alan Cumming was. Cabaret had not really been around in a long time, and there was an absolutely brilliant and heartbreaking performance, Natasha Richardson as Sally Bowles. And it was the great thing about my job, going to the theater, is you find something that you could never have imagined could have existed. Alan Cumming comes out as the MC. We know Joel Grey from the movie. All of a sudden, here's an actor you've never heard of before who is completely reinventing a character that you know from an Oscar-winning film. Natasha Richardson, nobody knew she could sing. In fact, she really couldn't sing. They were worried in previews that she wasn't hitting the notes. But she was such a great actress that she acted the songs as Sally Bowles, who's supposed to be a lousy singer. And Sam Mendes, who directed it. This is before anyone knew who Sam Mendes was. This is before Skyfall and all the other plays and movies that he's
done.
And
the Bridge Project that he's been doing.
Completely. Yeah. These were unknown people. And the excitement of the discovery and the energy that they brought at that point in their careers, I don't think can be captured again. And I'm afraid what the Roundabout, which is producing Cabaret, is doing, is they're trying to cash in on an old cash cow. You know, we know from reporting in the New York Times that they're in desperate straits financially, and they're trying to relive their past glory days, and they hope to make some money on it. And I just believe in show business. You know, there are no rules in show business except for one. You can't capture lightning in the bottle a second time.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm going to go to see it. I hope it does well, but I don't see how you can generate that kind of excitement you did when we didn't even know what it was going to be the first time around.
Well, we'll wrap up with Alan Cumming singing the role of the MC at the Tony Awards back in 1998 after the very well-received revival of Cabaret. Then it is part of a very, very busy spring season on Broadway. Michael Riedel's been sorting through it for us, theater columnist for the New York Post and co-host of the weekly TV show Theater Talk on PBS. Michael, thanks so much.
Pleasure.
Welcome, bienvenue, welcome. In cabaret, oh cabaret, to cabaret. Mesdames et Herren, Mesdames et Messieurs.
Head over to soundcheck.org for the latest dispatch from our project, the Morrissey Book Club. For the next 3 weeks, Soundcheck staff and listeners are reading the recently published memoir from the former Smiths frontman and solo artist.
I'm so sorry.
As a kid growing up in Manchester, England, Morrissey loved TV. And in his memoir, he lists no fewer than 28 shows that made a big impact on him. You might recognize some of them, like Tarzan and Batman, but a few others might be new to you, like Pinky and Perky, two pig puppets who had their own series on the BBC. Pinky and Perky, just one of the kid shows that Morrissey name drops in his autobiography. I'll let you make the connection between these pop puppet piglets, as he calls them, and Morrissey's future animal rights activism. Find out more about the Morrissey Book Club at soundcheck.org. Up next, a rising star of indie rock, Courtney Barnett, joins us to play one of the catchiest songs ever written about an asthma attack. This is Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and I'm really excited about today's musical guest. Australian singer and guitarist Courtney Barnett did one of my favorite albums of last year, a collection of stories told with buzzing guitars, low-key vocals, sharp observations, and a very dry wit. In fact, I think my favorite lyric from last year came from one of Courtney's songs. Actually, the song she's going to play for us now. Here in the Soundcheck studio is Courtney Barnett and her band, the Courtney Barnetts, with Avant Gardener.
Street, and he looks ambivalent. He
That is Courtney Barnett and her band, the Courtney Barnetts, live on Soundcheck with the song Avant Gardener. Courtney singing and playing guitar, Bones Sloan playing the bass, doing some backing vocals, Dave Moody behind our drum kit, and more backing vocals. The album is called The Double EP, A Sea of Split Peas by Courtney Barnett. Welcome to Soundcheck.
Hi, thanks for having us.
I love that line. Paramedic thinks I'm clever because I play guitar. I think she's clever because she stops people dying. In an age of Kanye-style egos, it's nice to hear that kind of perspective for a change.
Yeah, it was a bit of an epiphany moment. I remember thinking that when I was in the ambulance.
Now, did this so this really happened?
Yeah.
Was it an asthma attack, a panic attack?
I think it was like a panic attack mixed from some allergies in the garden slash asthma. I don't know.
Just for folks who were paying attention to the lyrics, when you say 40 degrees, you mean, of course, 40 degrees Celsius, which is brutally hot.
Yeah.
Does it get that hot in Melbourne a lot?
Yeah, I think it was 43 last week.
Yikes.
When we left, it was pretty hot. Bushfires.
Wow.
Badness.
Speaking of things that might be different here and there, here in the States, we recently concluded a TV series called The Office on NBC. You guys have that there, right?
Yeah.
So we recently had BJ Novak from The Office. He was one of the writers and executive producers, and he plays Ryan, the temp, right?
Yep.
So I want you to listen. Put your headphones on because I need you to hear this clip. This is BJ Novak on Soundcheck just a couple of weeks ago talking about one of his favorite new artists, yes, Courtney Barnett.
I love her. I play her all the time.
I'd rather die than owe the hospital till I get
off. This is my favorite song, Avant Gardener, but I love this whole album. I love everything she's put out. It's so spare and cool. It reminds me of Nirvana or Hole. It reminds me of sort of that early era, but the lyrics it's sort of a very modern way of writing lyrics. I could listen to her all day.
Street, and he looks ambivalent. He's probably wondering what I'm doing getting in an ambulance.
So that's BJ Novak from The Office.
Flattering?
Yeah. He mentions Nirvana and Hole.
Yeah, well, I grew up listening to Nirvana. I like Hole, but my brother and I were kind of Nirvana heads. It's the only CDs we had for a while.
So Avant Gardener, you mentioned that story actually happened, this kind of, allergy / panic attack. Once you tell people that, do they expect that all of the songs are about you? I mean, there's one song where you've just turned 24, which is true, right?
Yeah.
But then there are other songs that are fueled by way too much drinking. And I mean, at what point do you want people to stop seeing you as a person in your lyrics? If ever.
Well, all of the songs are kind of autobiographical, I guess, up till now. So I'm just sharing parts of my life and my observations so people can take from that whatever they wish.
Yeah. Now, you've done a lot of this yourself. You started your own label back home in Australia. But now there's an American label that's issuing your record here.
Mm-hmm.
And if you pre-order the American version of the double EP, A Sea of Split Peas, you get a limited edition tea towel with an illustration by you, apparently. Do you feel that modern Western society doesn't fully appreciate the utility of the tea towel?
Well, everyone uses a tea towel at some point. So I figured it was a good
It seemed like a good idea at the time.
Yeah.
What's the illustration?
The one on that tea towel is it's like a gutter with some chips spilled on the ground.
So
just some of my fine art. I spent 2 years at art school, and that's the best I can come up with.
Do you do your own like covers and stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah. The album is called The Double EP, A Sea of Split Peas, and we're going to hear another song from it right now. Here's Courtney Barnett and the Courtney Barnetts with History Eraser.
Thank you. sun. And in the taxi home, I'll sing you a trumpet song.
Courtney Barnett live on Soundcheck with her song History Eraser, which is on her CD called The Double EP, A Sea of Split Peas. Courtney Barnett singing, playing guitar, Bones Sloan playing bass, Dave Moody behind the drums, and Courtney Barnett and the Courtney Barnetts, the name of the band. So there's a kind of a 60s-ish sound to a lot of these songs. You mentioned before, you know, listening to Nirvana growing up. What about earlier stuff, the 60s music?
What else? Oh, we kind of, between us, we've got a pretty broad range of everything that we all listen to and influenced by. Like, we love the Beatles, Lou Reed, Bowie.
Well, you mentioned the Rolling Stones song, You Can't Always Get What You Want, mm-hmm. in History Eraser. And we've been asking our listeners and our guests all this week, you know, with all the 50th anniversary stuff of the Beatles and the Stones coming hot on their heels, are you a Beatles person or a Stones person?
I like both, but I've listened to more Beatles. I've just been, I think I got showed the Beatles first and, you know, obsessed over them and got a Beatles songbook and learnt how to play all the chords.
Oh,
and,
okay.
So...
Courtney Barnett is my guest in the Soundcheck studio. The album is called The Double EP, A Sea of Split Peas. The American version is available now for pre-order. It's actually out in April. Courtney Barnett and the Courtney Barnetts, thanks for being with
us. Thanks for having us.
I was busy underwater, seeing how long I could hold my breath.
Well, if you've been enjoying our session with Courtney Barnett, there's more where this came from. First of all, we've shot video and an extra song. Go to soundcheck.org for more from Courtney Barnett and the Courtney Barnetts. Tomorrow on the show, we'll talk with Fred Armisen and Carrie Brownstein, co-creators and stars of the IFC series Portlandia, which premieres in its fourth season this week. And the vocalist Natalia Clavier is best known for collaborating with the DJ duo known as Thievery Corporation, but tomorrow she'll perform songs from her own new record called Lumen. That does it for the show today. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.